This week on the PhD Cast, the decline of shiny floor shows. What oh what is to be made of the state of content on our screens? Plus, marketing consultant Peter Field releases his report, Seriously Social, which looks at the role of social media in the broader marketing mix, and the latest in-flight video from Air New Zealand, and it's epic. This is the PhD Cast from PhD Australia. Hey there, I'm Chris Stevenson, and joining me on the PhD Cast this week we have regulars Stu Gurney.
Hello!
Angela Rapley.
Hello!
And Christian Zavara.
Hello!
And it's been an exciting week in media. A ton going on. Let's start off with a story around shiny floor shows. We'll get on to why they're called shiny floor. But Umbrella reports that shiny floor talent show audiences, it's not that easy to say, are tumbling whilst renovations are holding firm. Franchises The Voice, The X Factor, both posted double-digit audience declines compared to their 2013 runs. But House Rules, MasterChef and The Block are enjoying a renaissance. Angela, what's a shiny floor talent show?
This reminds me of a conversation I had with a very large FMCG client a couple of years ago.
Not that he was especially large.
No.
A large FMCG client.
But I put up a kind of cost comparison for shiny floor shows, which I'll explain in a minute, over Asia. And they said, why would I pay $4 million for a shiny floor? And I was like, no. Shiny floor television is those big tentpole, glitzy glam shows that you see on a Saturday night in the UK, and you see them during the week in this country.
Continually,
that's all you see on this on free-to-air television here. It's nothing about floor cleaning.
Why would I pay that much for a shiny floor?
Why would I pay $4 million for a shiny floor?
Wow, flooring is very expensive. Cost per tile.
Anyway,
CPT. a media in-joke, that one.
Haven't people been talking about the decline of reality TV and the decline of these kind of shows forever? I know these are actual audience decline. No, but we've heard this before.
Now there's actual decline.
But apart from that, they're still being hawked around. Simon Cowell has just sold the UK version of the X Factor to 147 countries, which is a
just sold
at MIPCOM this year to 147 different countries.
Well, it's a good job we did, because the audience is down 19.97%
in
Australia.
In this country, there's a problem here whereby the free to air networks spend all of their programming budget on these big tentpole shows, and that's an issue. So if you're spending something between $25 million, which is roughly what these things cost, and $40 million for either an X Factor or a Voice,
wow,
that leaves you with comparatively little to spend on other programming.
Can I ask you one question? Like, how big proportion of this actually is licensing fees for the name of these shows?
You are paying a big chunk of that to Simon Cowell and his ilk, but the production costs in these shows are huge. The lighting rigs, the staffing, the staff, the production that goes in.
The talent,
precisely. So they are expensive, but somebody is definitely walking away with a big chunk of money. And, the networks would cry the poor mouth and say it's not them and it's going into Simon Cowell or whoever's pocket. But, they're inordinately expensive.
And the reality is these audience declines aren't going to hit Simon Cowell or any of that. They're going to hit the networks that will have lower revenues from brands and advertisers, right?
I still think that there will be interest in these shows next year, because what else are they going to spend their money on?
Well, that's the really important thing, because it just shows a complete lack of imagination and creativity to keep regurgitating and reformatting effectively the same show in different ways. And I think there's a really interesting, and we talked a lot about, Christian brought a great word for us this week, which was apophenia. Is it?
Apophenia.
Oh, see, I can't even say it. I knew I'd get it wrong. Apophenia, which is basically...
Apophenia.
Apophenia. Oh, whatever. I'm never going to use it again. Apophenia. Which is obviously the misinterpretation of data and seeing relationships when they're not necessarily there. And I think there's a really behavioural trend, hypothesis, it'd be great to get some insight into this around people just putting programs on and watching telly because not actually it's watching on. It, just watching because
it's on.
It's
on in the background. It's wallpaper.
And these, so basically, you've got a share of people who are putting on the background, not engaging with it, not watching it, and that is where you've got ratings. And that's, I don't think it's ratings are necessarily indicative to.
But at the same time, you could argue that most of the so engagement-based ratings would be actually coming from these type of shows.
Engagement based, not at all.
I tell you why. No. I tell you why. If you look at the second screen issue with something like The Voice, yeah. where they have those home coaches, if you watch, I'm one of those saddos that sits and watches The Voice on both her TV screen and on Twitter. I can't help myself. I am obsessed.
Quite more common than you think. I think 52% of people multi-screen.
Absolutely. But you're talking about engagement. You're saying it's just on the background for a lot of people watching.
Yeah.
Who may or may not.
But
what watch, I'm
saying,
that's indicative of
my point to that was that they're watching because there's no good content. Like it's a choice thing, right? There's a massive opportunity in this market for a channel to come up with some brilliant creative programming. And I know it's hard because actually, if you look at Channel 10. Like kudos to Channel 10.
They,
some of their content is really awesome.
Compared to, yeah.
But we default to the habits and the behaviours around what's out there. So there's a really interesting thing in play. I haven't got to the bottom of it in my head yet. But I don't think it's about just.
There's lots of talent out in this country. There's loads of good programming. They tend to be on ABC and SBS.
Agreed. Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff on free to air, but they are hidden by the fact that these juggernauts. They're competing against the budgets of these.
Yeah,
mass,
and it cannot be coincidence that one of the highest illegal download rates is in Australia. There's got to be a correlation to the content there that's available.
Or lack of.
How you define quality content? Because also quality content can be really really polarizing as well. So if you say that it's actually something that really not only is like high quality in terms of the recording and the actresses and actors, but also like in the storyline, in the dialogues that are going in there. And I think that's actually for a large amount for the population, it's actually quite scary, especially like in the lower things, like less educated people, for instance. So what do you think they would be watching, like what would be quality content that actually is able to generate mass and thus also attract
MasterChef apparently.
But look at Mad Men, right? I think as an example of what everybody and what critics interpret as being quality content, got rubbish ratings, never rated, got very poor traction in terms of the general populace. But in terms of credibility, it was up there, and it's always rated as lauded as a great program. You're talking about quality; it's interpreted in different ways by different people.
Do you think quality and scale will always be a trade-off?
No.
Maybe.
I think
the definition of quality changes. So, like,
I love that. Half and shout yes, half and shout no. That was
controversy.
Good.
But I think the notion of quality is different. So, what one man's gold is another man's trash type analogy. But that's true. Like, some people will hold up The Voice and The X Factor as quality, premium content. And you've got, like, high-end celebrities. You've got the Kylies of the world. You've got the Will.i.ams. That's pretty quality. The quality doesn't have to be high, cinematic, beautiful, aesthetic shots and stuff.
Sure.
Quality can still
from
that.
For me, what's quite interesting is that we are still talking about The X Factors. We're still talking about The Voices, The MasterChefs, the Big Brothers. But we are not talking about the Love Childs, we're not talking about the Gallipolis, the stuff that also takes like huge amount of money to produce, and I would argue that many of them are actually pretty good.
But do we think there's enough experimentation and specifically within the reality TV genre? It's Seven spoke from Umbrella, and they were quoted as saying Seven are experimenting with the big adventure, but we don't think the format is sufficiently different to become a 1.5 to 2 million rating program. By their own admission, they don't think
it's
sufficiently different.
It's a Survivor iteration.
There's
nothing particularly. It's rehashing. Can I just bring your attention to what I just read, just coming off the back of some stuff from MIPCOM?
Yes, you can.
This is when I talk about quality, hear me out and hear that one of the most talked about formats at MIPCOM this year was called Keep Your Dog Alive. Whereby people compete to receive a newborn clone of their beloved aging pooch. this, I tell you, will be the highest rating show.
This is the end
of 2050.
No, this is the end of civilization. This is how it begins.
It's really interesting. Well, like Blade Runner, this is where we're going. Yeah. But what's really interesting, I think, is you're getting a very clear kind of deduping of this mass entertainment accessible, what typically now is kind of the reality TV stuff, to dramas. There's not enough in between. Default model over here in this space. Seeing everything in the bottom of the matrix. There's stuff here. They're not going, what can we make? What can we do that's completely different? That's going to happen.
Channel 4 kind of model.
Where are the SBSs? Where are the ABCs in this?
Well, maybe I think actually goes back to a lot of promotion and advertising. Like, as I said before, Channel 10 and SBS have some awesome programming, but we don't find them, we lose them. So in a very cluttered and fragmented environment, it's up for those guys to amplify and tell the stories better. Like, everyone knows when the voice is on, because they shout about it.
But it's almost like Double Jeopardy. It's almost like that rule that the more programs watched, the more it's likely to be watched, because it's got more mental and physical availability.
But interesting, when you look at... So You Think You Can Dance.
There's a blog post in there somewhere.
So You Think You Can Dance. So I think 10 put a lot of promotion and a lot of activity behind So You Think You Can Dance, and it didn't do very well. So it's not...
But that's because I think there's a fundamental flaw with that format.
Agree.
Which is possibly one of the reasons why it doesn't track as well as...
I agree. I think it's about picking, like, being innovative and being clever and climbing up as a creative space in this mass medium thing. And it's not about rehashing. It's about, okay, clever people...
We're cloning dogs. You can't...
True. I mean, that is not rehashing.
Celeb pole dancing, which is a new Dutch format.
Or dating naked, I saw the other day.
Cloning
celeb would be pole dancing.
It's interesting. It's definitely creating a kind of a high art versus low art kind of debate around popular culture, which I think
was
really.
Hasn't that always been the case?
Yes, I know, but I think through fragmentation and through kind of the just mass media, you're actually kind of polarizing even
further. Because when you think about it, what's changed is actually where the control of that was. So historically, the control was with commissioners and broadcasters. And so if you ever needed to realign what was being made in content, there was a channel controller and a team of commissioners, they could realign.
Yeah.
Whereas now, because there's so much fragmentation, because the increasing amounts of on-demand, then there's less control of that. In fact, if anything, where control is emerging is in and around the YouTubes or in and around those other online providers that have got data around what's being consumed. House of Cards famously came about because of a data correlation between the star of House of Cards,
Kevin Spacey.
So people watched Kevin Spacey and people watched the old House of Cards. Yeah. And it was a data call. And the power that these new online platforms have is really interesting in this space.
Yeah, and
the power of the platform actually comes from its fluidity more than anything, because if you're a TV channel, then you have an inventory that you actually need to fill out. So and it doesn't matter if it's a teleshop or if it's X Factor, there is on-air time that you need to fill in. And I think this is what's struggling. So the question is whether, for instance, for these channels, would it be more beneficial to like have like half the day, right? Then especially in the lowest watch periods of the day, like have teleshop all around, and then basically just hear me out. And basically, you could put all the production money in like the top tier, like the prime time environment, and just literally.
But they're putting it into.
But not enough. Christian wants them to do that to extreme.
Exactly, because now
to extreme extent.
Yeah, because now what you end up with is exactly that what we were talking about. Like there's just the content that more or less is good for everyone, but not really for like the top tier of people. But it's there because you need, and you still need to spend lots of money on it. So you don't have enough money for quality production. This is what's basically also killing, I would argue, inspiration or imagination, because there's so many formats out there. I can't imagine that whenever they are going to these huge, I don't know what these called, these marks,
yeah.
when they are actually taking a look at different formats, they couldn't find anything. So it's not the solution, but it's, I think it's a different approach.
Yeah, it's, I don't, because I think it's about assuming the lowest common denominator almost. It's like, it's a bit of an
over-segmenting. Overestimate or underestimate the intelligence of the audience. I think that happens.
That's what exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
how do you create slightly nicer, slightly more quality, in whatever term you want to define that, mass entertainment? That is a brilliant brief. I'd love to work on that. I don't know the answer is, but
we are part of the problem, though. As
advertisers,
well. Advertisers and
agencies
are utterly
agencies
part
of the problem.
So
I agree.
Can we all fix this, please, and get better stuff in our telly rather than celeb pole dancing and keep your dog alive?
Still today.
By 5 o'clock. Moving swiftly on.
Yes, moving on. And in other news this week, yesterday you saw the release of a report by someone who's nothing short of a god, Peter Field, who is genuinely amazing. He's a marketing consultant. His latest report analyses case studies from the Walk Prize for Social Strategy called Seriously Social. And in that report, he concludes that there is an ideal number of channels that should be used alongside social. Too many, and it's too dissipated, but too few can weaken the multiplier effect. The main finding, however, is that social media works best when operating as one of a number of channels and not typically the lead one. Social is not a lead channel when it comes to marketing. Shock horror, right?
Is it?
I don't know, is it?
I think it's contestant Peter Field subject the bleeding obvious a little bit. Because I would have thought, I read it and I kind of went, well, that makes sense. Everything he's saying is, I'm not remotely surprised with the findings of this particular report. I would have always thought that social is a brilliant supporting, plays a supporting role.
It's
like a great supporting
amplifier,
actress.
It's an engager, it's
It's the great supporting actress role, but not necessarily the leading character.
Social media, the supporting actress of the media toolkit. I like it.
Potentially.
Yeah, but to be honest, also, like, what I was thinking as well, there's nothing extraordinary and new. The only thing that I found quite interesting around it was this magic number around 8, which I didn't really get why it is. And this
many,
is, I would actually argue, that it's also too many, because just from an optimization point of view, like when you're actually taking a look at those 8 channels, I would argue that your top 3 channels will probably deliver around 80% of your reach. Then you are using 5 other channels
Top 3 channels in terms of reach driving.
In terms of driving reach, exactly. Then you just spend a lot of money in the remaining channels to drive that further 20%. I'm not quite sure that's actually cost effective. So that was quite interesting for me. But apart from that, I was thinking as the same, that it's kind of stating the stuff that we've been always stating as well, and I don't even recall like any campaign lately, especially that really had social in its heart to such an extent that it was absolutely led by social media. But
I'm trying to think. There's a few, and don't ask me to name them, but there are a few that I can vaguely think of that were led by Instagram. So Instagram is generally the kind of social platform du jour in terms of, you know, you can run an entire campaign via Instagram. But
interestingly, Peter Field has noted Instagram is a possible exception to this rule.
Oh.
He says, on the basis of limited data, it appears to enjoy superior performance across all timescales. So it is interesting. There might be something yet in Instagram that makes it the exception that proves the rule on this.
Mm-hmm.
And the standalone Instagram campaigns
could be
the exception.
I'm wondering what's driving that, though. Like, is it driving that people are abandoning Facebook and migrating to Instagram?
My hunch would be it's purely imagery. That it's duplicating the way brands communicate. Through imagery and design.
Then my question is, why it's not Pinterest?
It's a stronger platform. It's just in general in terms of numbers, but I don't think, other than that, I don't think there would be any.
I don't think we're going to crack this question. There was
that beautiful 2 seconds of silence that we had when you asked the question, which I really enjoyed. Also this week, Air New Zealand, who are the masters of this, have released the latest in their in-flight safety videos, the 6th one. I think 14 years, a 14-year long relationship with Peter Jackson, and the Lord of the Rings and now the Hobbit films, the latest one, the most epic yet in flight entertainment. These are great, right?
Yeah, they are. In terms of, I mean, they're beautiful. They're beautifully constructed. I mean, I laughed when I watched it, but I'm kind of thinking, is the joke over? Like, I love them. I've loved every one of them that I've seen, but I'm kind of going, oh yeah.
You're asking a question. Are you saying the joke's over?
I'm wondering, is the joke over?
Are we carry this by saying Air New Zealand are a client and we love them and they're great and we adore working with them.
Yes, exactly. It's a brilliant piece of content.
But you've kind of,
beautifully made. I mean, you cannot question the quality. It's amazing. But that's a long time to continue, you know, cracking the same joke, literally. And I just wonder, is it time for something else? You know,
it's the last one.
In general, I love what they do.
I don't know.
I think it's the last one, isn't it?
Any more movies coming out, so I don't know if there's any more possibility to.
But they're brilliant marketers. So Betty, whether it's Betty White, whether it's those Sports Illustrated girls, whether it's The Hobbit, they are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
The All Blacks, they do amazingly through this as well in this sponsorship. I mean, they are so, so good at using what is a phenomenally, potentially valuable bit of owned media. Of owned media they've got, and absolutely leveraging it and milking it. It's absolutely brilliant how they do it.
I'd love to see what they come out next. I'd love to see them park this for the moment and then embrace something else and make us all laugh.
Yeah, and to be honest, from an extent I totally understand, like, if this is really, it seems like this is actually their last chance to use this platform, to use this amazing asset that everybody knows. So part of the reason why I actually myself would like to go to New Zealand, because I've seen it in Lord of the Rings and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. So,
and it is like that. When you go there, you do feel a bit like you're in Middle Earth. It is that good.
Yeah,
then again, I am Hobbit signed.
Do I dare make a joke about small but perfect performance of Christine's? I dare not. You already did it, so there you go.
I did it for you. And that's really a big thank you to Stu and Angela and Christian.
Yay!
I was Chris Stevenson, and thank you for listening to the PhD cast. We'll be back next week. Have a good week.